Welcome back. If you've just joined us, you're watching Stockwatch, and joining me in studio this evening is Graham Koerner from Koerner Perspective. We were going to have Frans de Klerk, our technical analyst, on the line. Unfortunately, we've lost connection to him, though, so it's Graham, a one-man show with you this evening.
Oh dear.
If you'd like to send questions to us, please do SMS stock in the question to 41392. You can email stockwatch@bdtv.co.za, or you can tweet us at BusinessDayTV using the hashtag Stockwatch. Graham, glad to have you in studio, otherwise it would be a very lonely place
indeed.
So we scraped ourselves into the green today. US markets came back a little bit. But I think more generally, I kind of wonder what the conversations are that you're having with some of your clients and people out there when you've got these US markets hitting records or the longest bull market in US history. And then you look at the South African market and you think, well, we're nowhere. You know, and why aren't we producing the same kind of returns as the US stock market?
What about us? Absolutely right. And I think that, look, we're not unique in the sense that, and I've been pulling some numbers. And if you look over just a two-year view, because it's not very long, but it's long enough to be meaningful. If you look at the JSE equally weighted index, it's down about 10% over those 2 years. I'm excluding dividends now. If you look at the S&P, which has not benefited as much as the NASDAQ, it's up over 30%. When you look at that divergence, it's massive. Yeah. Add to that the fact that we've got inflation running at whatever, pick a number, 4.5%, 5%, and the US has got very little. So, yeah, you really do feel like we're missing out. And I think a lot of investors are saying, but, you know, why is this? Sure, we understand South Africa had a lost decade. We shot ourselves in both feet economically from a policy point of view. And you've seen that even in companies like ShopRite, and we'll get to, you know, Massmart and Woolies and some self-inflicted wounds, and others just a function of a very difficult environment, disposable income under pressure, consumers under pressure. But I think the point that I'm trying to make is that the equally weighted, which is probably a better reflection of SA corporate.
Yeah. So what, smoothing up the position that NASPAS or some of the dual listeds have?
Correct. So you take NASPAS's 20% and Richemont's, let's call it 10%, and you say, well, we're only going to put 2.5, let's call it, and we're going to have an equally weighted top 40 index. It tells you that South Africa Incorporated has been a horrible place. And even if you look, you know, over the year to date, the top 40 is mildly down, but I think the equally weighted is down probably about 7 or 8%. So the conversations are difficult ones because people want returns, but the equity market's not doing it, the bond market's not doing it, the listed property market's not doing it.
Well, although there is divergence, there are some shares in it that have done it. But would you say now is looking almost better for investors in the next couple of years than it has in the last couple of years, given what's happened to some of the stock prices? Okay, and if we look at Woolworths and Massmart as two examples, Woolworths came out with results today which weren't great. The shares fell, I think, over 6% at one point this morning, but closed just under 2%
weaker.
Yeah, about
2% down, yeah.
Would you rather buy Woolworths now than you might have wanted to buy 2 years ago?
Look, there's work to be done. But, you know, not because we think we're smarter than everybody else, because we definitely aren't, but we tend to like buying companies that we feel have got lots of levers they can pull. If I look at Woolworths, let's be honest, they made a right mess of beauty and fashion. Food helped them out. That David Jones acquisition, which I originally thought was an ill-timed venture, proved to be correct. But just listening to Ian Moyer today, I was actually quite encouraged. I get the sense they know what they need to do. If you look at David Jones, you know, they've obviously taken a 6.9 billion rand write down, which has a small impact on the income statement. But I think generally I like the noise that was coming out. So I would rather buy it now and say, okay, well, there actually only a few things need to go right for them to deliver really good earnings growth, just to get kind of back on track, on trend, rather than buying it maybe 2 years ago at $120 when everybody thought this thing was going to carry on delivering 20%, and you sort of said, well, it's running out of track, it's cannibalizing its own base, and the competitive environment's growing. So yes, ironically, we're seeing more value today than we did 2 years ago, but I think you've got to be philosophical and patient.
Yeah. I mean, on David Jones, did you get the sense, listening to the presentation, that they would have to take another impairment? That is not their sense that I got. I got the sense that...
It's done.
It's done, because this is one of the big fears about Woolworths, is whether or not you're going to have to take more pain on David Jones, or whether they're going to be able to trade themselves out of where they're at.
So I think they've done quite a lot of heavy lifting, a lot of hard work in actually trying to get David Jones repositioned. And I suppose some people would say, well, you should have thought about it before you try to sort of fundamentally change the model. But if you just look, they in Oz generally, which is the combination of Country Road and David Jones, they've taken $25 million Aussie dollars out of their expense base. So, you know, you had restructuring costs. They moved the head office from Sydney. They've opened new stores. They've obviously gone through quite a big transformation in repositioning David Jones more to almost like a Woolies experience. These things take time. So in answer to your question, if you look at the first 7 weeks, I think they spoke right at the end of the results presentation about the first 7 weeks of the new year, and David Jones was looking quite a lot better. I think they were up
2%.
No, it was
no,
more
4%.
Than it was 4%. Almost 4%. Yep. It was 3.9%. And Country Road was also looking good. Unfortunately, the Achilles heel, which is fashion and beauty, is still, you know, negative revenue growth. But if that is right, then there's not going to be a need for a further write down. And you add 20 million Aussie dollars onto that, and you take the once offs out, and you assume the model starts shooting roots, it could be a very interesting story.
What about some of the other retailers? And so maybe before we talk about Massmart, there's a question on Dis-Chem. And I noticed Clicks, for example, had a fantastic day. It was up 5.5%. I'm not entirely sure why. The question is, though, why would any fund manager buy Clicks or Dis-Chem at 30-plus PEs? So if we're talking about shares where you get suckered into them, yeah, and then you get disappointed for the next couple of years, which was clearly the case with Woolworths, why then are Clicks and Dis-Chem still running, and notwithstanding the high PEs that everyone has just about flagged?
So I think I was also scratching around trying to figure out why Clicks was going up. And the best theory I could come up with is, because if you look at it, it's Capitec, it's Discovery, it's ShopRite. And I think people are saying we want to go with quality. We don't want to go with people who have disappointed us or are likely to disappoint us. And I mean, I think the market looked through the ShopRite results and said, there were a couple of one-offs and inflation is low. You just need a little bit of wind at their backs and things could look a lot better. So Julieta, my guess is the market is saying, where the models are working, where we trust management, we're actually prepared to pay stupid multiples simply for that luxury. But then people like us would say it's bigger fool theory, because if you're paying a 30 multiple and something just goes a little bit wrong, and we saw that with Dis-Chem, you know, it got taken to a really lofty multiple, disappointed, and it had it came back to earth with a thud. I think that's the reality of it. If you're playing a short-term game and you're saying, listen, I want to play the retail and I want to be best of breed and I'll put tight stop losses, pity we don't have France now, then you can play that sort of game. But we sort of sit it out, because it's exactly the same rationale as a Bidcorp, for example. Come up with good results, good hard currency results, earnings growth, and you know, then the share price might slip simply because the market almost expects too much when you're on a 20 or a 25 or a 30 multiple. So in answer to the question, why would any fund manager buy them? I don't know. I think it might simply be a case of go with the momentum. People might very well be saying, listen, you can carry on shorting things like, you know, Woolworths and Massmart, because operationally they haven't turned the corner. But I think it's a very dangerous game, because there's a lot of optionality in some of these businesses because they've really taken it on the chin.
Yeah. What about telecom? So last night's conversation, we spoke with Wayne and David quite a lot about MTN and also Blue Label Telecoms. Blue Label actually recovering today, I think about 5%, after yesterday's savaging at the market's hands. And the question is, should I be avoiding the telecom sector for the next couple of years if I currently own no MTN, Vodacom or Telkom?
So the risk of being really boring, why do you want to buy them? As far as we're concerned, I've said it many times and I'll reiterate, I think telecoms, particularly in South Africa, but it's an Africa story, it's probably a Middle Eastern story as well, are moving more and more towards utilities. So yes, the dividend yields are good, but there's probably a reinvestment cycle that is necessary. So you know, what's the right multiple for a utility? I would say, well, it's probably not 16 or 18. And also there are lots of regulatory issues. You know, MTN's got Iran. So I think MTN is better run, better placed right now. You get the feeling that new management is quite energetic. But what are you buying it for? Why would you pay sort of high teens PEs or whatever the number is, and say, okay, well, I'm getting the dividend yield, because the dividend yield is telling you something about the business model. So, and you've seen it in Vodacom, really disappointing, you know, earnings growth numbers. And people are saying, yeah, but Safaricom and, you know, a pivoting of the business model. I want to see it happen first. So the question is, do you have to be in telecoms? Do you have this burning desire to own, you know, cell operators or not? And I do think that and I say it every time, the big disruptor is not MTN trying to tackle Vodacom's market share or Cell C doing a recap and really giving them a run for their money. It's fiber. That's where I believe the big disruptor is. You know, you can get fiber to the home for 300 or 400 or 700 bucks and you can, yeah.
Well, didn't you buy a Remgro? Although they have lightened, because they had Dark Fiber Africa. Mm. And I haven't looked at it closely recently, but they seem to have sold off a big chunk of that, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, I think DFA themselves were in transactions, if memory serves. I think they were looking at Vuma. But in Remgro, that is so tiny relative to what's going on in Mediclinic and First Rand stroke RMI and Distell that, you know, it's really a daft way of going about it.
But then would you, okay, so, but if data, if fiber, if cabling was where it's all happening, are there any companies that one can access that?
Not listed, not that I can see. I mean, you get companies like, you know, the Roynets and the Eyalt, for example, that theoretically give you that. But again, it's such a thin part of the market that I think it's a race to the bottom, quite frankly. So I would just avoid them. Having said that, let's see if MTN, for example, can morph into something more where financial services and media becomes bigger. Because when I look at the African continent and South Africa, I think DSTV, you know, MultiChoice is going to have a really tough time.
Yeah.
If you've got an MTN, for example, or Vodacom partnering with a Netflix, or, you know, as Cell C is trying to do with Black, their offering, it could be an interesting space. But I think you've got time, and you want to see those new business models actually mature. Otherwise, what are you doing? You're buying very pedestrian earnings growth, I believe, with a lot of regulatory risk.
Yeah. And then maybe just the last comment or point on this, and it was a question that came through late last night, so just it will link here, saying Cell C indicates that it plans to list in 2020, so that was the plan,
yeah.
Is the plan. The question being, what will Cell C have to do to make itself more attractive, a more attractive investment than MTN and Vodacom?
Sure, it's a difficult one because the playing fields are now are level. You know, balance sheet, I think, is important. I think with the introduction of Blue and NetOne, the debt is not the same issue as it was. But, you know, if you are the third or the fourth operator and you're scrapping for market share with Telkom, who's also probably got an unfair advantage over you, I remember when Blue did that deal, and I thought, I can't actually understand the rationale behind it, because I don't wish Cell C ill by any means. But, you know, you've got an industry that is becoming increasingly utilitarian, and where I think it's going to become harder to eke out profit growth, and you've got a lot more competition coming potentially. It's not a recipe that I. So why play there, frankly, yeah. Is, I suppose, the point.
Okay. We'll leave it there for the moment. If you'd like to send questions to us, please do SMS us, stock in the question, to 41392. You can email stockwatch@bdtv.co.za, or you can tweet us @businessdaytv using the hashtag stockwatch. Welcome back. Let's have a look at what's happening to US markets at the moment. After feverish rallies of the last couple of days, they have actually pulled back a bit. So the S&P 500 down just over 0.1%, the NASDAQ slightly higher, and the Dow Jones trading about 0.3% weaker. So it doesn't look as if we've managed to hold above records set in January. The FTSE 100 pulling back about a fifth of a percent today, the CAC flat, and the DAX also about a fifth of a percent weaker. And still with me in studio is Graham Koerner from Koerner Perspective. Graham, any comment on the US markets? Do you think that there's going to be a next leg higher? That's sort of like asking you to predict the future. What for you would be the catalyst for next leg higher in the US stock markets?
It feels to me as though, and even if you look, as we were saying, if you look on a year to date, a lot of global indices are actually softer and they're looking vulnerable. I think the drainage of liquidity is going to weigh. Trump is now sort of thinking he's sorted the economy out, he's sorted the Middle East out, he's going to try and sort our land issues out, and then might as well fix monetary policy in the U.S. while he's about it. But in spite of that, I think the reality is the U.S. Fed is on track, and I think that drainage of liquidity is probably going to offset. Also, the benefits of the tax reforms we're in that sweet spot now, and I guess that'll start to wane. And how do we look forward in a world like we're in now? But effective markets always do look forward, and I think people are starting to say, if you look at it on balance of arguments, the pegs, so the PEs you're paying for the growth you're getting in the US, you're actually feeling quite comfortable. Life is good. You're getting, I think the forecast for the full year is about 18% earnings growth out of the S&P. And those multiples are around those sort of numbers. So people are thinking this is good. But you look forward and you say, where's the earnings growth going to come from?
Yeah.
And although Donald Trump seems to maintain that, these tariffs are not going to have any sort of effect on U.S. GDP or consumption or on inflation, I think, those of us that didn't read that economics textbook don't really agree with that. So I'm battling to see where it's coming from. And also, Juliet, if we look at it, what's it, 3,500, let's call it, days of uninterrupted bull market. And we think, okay, let's think about the foundation on which we built this record bull market. Global financial crisis, massive increase in government debt.
Cheap money.
I don't know. I'm not saying the markets are going to fall in a heap. But the rest of the world has dislocated from the U.S. It's, I suppose, like Trumponomics. It's us against the world. If you look at China, it's in bear market territory, down over 20%. Europe is looking soggy. Quite a few emerging markets have been pummeled. So I think that as the tax effects wear off, and also let's see how suddenly politics and the legal system is becoming quite interesting in the US.
Yes.
But I think it's probably going to be the gravity of interest rate hikes that actually weigh on that.
Yeah. We spoke briefly about Remgro, because I was asking you about Dark Fiber Africa, and you said that it was such a small part of Remgro's life. The bigger drivers are First Rand and MediClinic. It was a question on MediClinic saying, yeah. I'm still sitting on MediClinic despite numerous indications to drop it, and I keep believing it should come right. My time frame is for life, hopefully 20 plus years. Should I hold on for the long term or give up on it?
Okay, so I think this is such a beautiful example, because the share price is effectively halved. Yeah. And we know about Al Noor, and we know about the co-payments. We know about all these problems, and they overpaid. They should have probably been a bit more cautious on Al Noor. That's now history. They have a good business in Switzerland. I think they've got a good business in the Middle East. I think there'll be synergies and operating leverage benefits in there. I think in South Africa they're also pivoting a little bit, not just from the traditional healthcare, but moving in more into the subacutes and things. So, Julieta, that's exactly the point that I was trying to make. A lot of shares, when you ask us how are people feeling about life, a lot of people, we don't own MediClinic, but a lot of people are saying, but I want my 10%, or I want my 12%, or my withdrawal on my living annuity is 8, I've got to get 8. You can't get 8 when the markets are broadly going down and the bond market is going weaker and the listed property market's not being. But when I say that, if this viewer has backed the story and says, okay, well, that's all history, but looking forward, I still like the story. And yeah, with hindsight, I would rather have paid $90 than $120 or whatever the number is. If they still like the story, I think that's what we're saying. We're seeing more value, but we, I suppose, a little bit philosophical in saying, you know, just as we are long-suffering shareholders in a few small caps that have not been star performers, not that the value story is there or there's actually a fault, we hope, in the investment case, but it's just a case of the markets are probably going to be soggy and nervous for longer than we think. So when you've got a longer-term investment horizon and you still believe in the management team, you believe in the investment case, what else are you going to do with it? Are you going to sell it at 90 bucks and say, well, I'm going to wait for it to go to 130 and for, you know, confirmation that everything is right? So I think generally people need to go back to the fundamental reasons of why they bought them. If they still like the story, ignore what the prices are doing, ideally go on a six-month holiday and just try and not get sucked into the emotion of it, because it's really difficult to eke out performance right now. And ironically, the more you think, the more you're applying your logic and saying, I'm looking for value. If you look at what the Naspers discount to realistic NAV, it rocketed. It has eased back a little bit. That's completely counterintuitive. And I think those are the kinds of stories that we're saying, just stick with them, because what else are you going to do?
Yeah, okay. And especially if your time frame is 20 years plus, or life, or whichever comes longer.
Yeah.
Just before we get to other questions, I wanted to ask your thoughts on Grand Parade. We talk about long-suffering shareholder and a small cap stock, because they came out with a very intriguing SEN statement. I'm not sure if it was after the market close or thereabouts, but they have basically had a demand from shareholders. Mm. So they say, from parties purporting to be agents of beneficial shareholders that hold 12.6% of the voting rights of the company. And basically, in terms of the demand, the representatives propose that all of the non-executive directors of Grand Parade be removed, and that shareholders then re-elect four non-executive directors from both the removed directors and from four new individuals that have been proposed as non-executive directors of GPR. So GPR, it's in the process of verifying whether the demand is valid. If there were to be some, so this is shareholder activism, and you know, I've spoken to people who are really unhappy with the way things are being managed there.
Yeah.
Could this be the catalyst that kind of sets Grand Parade's back to trading somewhere even close to its net asset value, which is, isn't it about 5 or 6 rand?
Well, depending on how you calculate it. I mean, I get to $6 quite easily, even after lobbing off head office expense. So I think this is the kind of thing that is necessary, because I think it's a question of revolving doors, you know, in terms of the leadership. Sort of a, to call it flip-flopping is maybe a little bit unfair, but you know, the strategy doesn't seem really coherent. At one level, we sell down, you know, Grand West, but then we say, no, we're really keen on holding these assets. We're long-term holders, and we're getting very mixed messages. What are you? Are you an investment holding company who's kind of agnostic about your investments? Are you very focused on the quick service model? You know, what
are
you?
Which is what they do seem to be. They focus on getting Burger King up and running, Dunkin' Donuts.
Yeah, but those
Baskin Robbins, I think.
Absolutely, but look, Baskin Robbins is a sideshow. But so I think there is a lot of frustration, and I've vented some of my frustration, and I think it's about time, because value has been destroyed. They are great assets, as we've seen, for example. In the likes of Sun International, where there's a recap, suddenly we get on the front foot. You look at what Sun Slots is doing in Sun's life. You say these are good assets. We actually just need to monetize them. Just give us a strategic direction. But please, let's not trade at 1.77 rand when the NAV is 5 or 6 rand. It just drives people like us nuts.
Yeah, well, you're not alone, clearly, Graham, because people have now demanded this meeting with Grand Parade, so that'll be very interesting to see what happens. Before we get to your stock pick this evening, just very quickly, Capitec, with Viceroy burning red hot, and presumably covering shorts, Capitec must be a great short here after the shorts are covered. Does that logic make sense to you?
So what they're saying is that when the bear sellers have been forced to cover, and potentially a tightly held, thinly traded market. So if you can build your shorts up over a short period of time, and then you might have to cover them quite quickly. It's gone from 850 to 1,000 or thereabouts. So these guys are probably saying on fundamentals. And when you look at it, you know, we always look at what earnings growth are you getting and what is the multiple. It doesn't feel right. The earnings growth rates are definitely moderating. They are pivoting into new areas and elsewhere into the continent, but that's small. So I think on balance of arguments, it looks very expensive.
Okay.
But short selling tightly held shares, because if Viceroy couldn't crack this thing, you know, what are you actually hoping for?
Yeah. Or maybe just cash in, just a pure vanilla sale. In which case, we get to our stock pick this evening, which is, it's not a short, it's not really a pick, it's a call, I guess, on Sasol. Graham, you think it's time to sell?
Well, it's time to lighten. So we, 2-3 years ago, were worried about Sasol because we felt the market was being too optimistic on oil prices, too bearish on the rand. We felt that they were going to spend telephone numbers on Louisiana, which they did. But if you look, Louisiana's coming online, oil sitting at, call it, 74. If you say the rand oil price at, what, 1,100 or what, between 1,000 and 1,100, that puts them on track for 50, 60 bucks worth of earnings. But the rand has been hit hard, along with emerging market currencies. There's a lot of good news priced in here. If oil goes from 74 to 65, for example, and you've got 9%, all I'm saying is take a little bit of money off the table. Look at that run, Juliet. It's gone from 400 bucks to 550, let's call it, in a very short space of time. And let's also concede that if Trump does have an impact on global trade and global GDP, it could have an unintended consequence. Thus far, emerging market commodities, copper particularly, have corrected. The developed market commodities have held up well. I think I would just take a little bit of risk off the table.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's where we leave it. Graham, thanks for holding us afloat this evening. Graham Koerner is, of course, from Koerner Perspective, and we'll be back with more of your stock-related questions on Monday. So have a good evening.